The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, yesterday, the European Council met in Brussels to discuss everything from Ukraine and Russia to trade deals and economic strategies. Ukraine, now almost 4 years into the war with Russia, has been running out of money and is on the verge of bankruptcy. The EU's plan had originally been to use the over 200 billion euro worth of frozen Russian assets to fund a loan to Ukraine. However, that didn't exactly go to plan. And speaking of failed plans, Ursula von der Leyen's trip to Brazil to sign the Mercosur deal had to be cancelled as the leaders failed to agree a vote. Bloomberg Brussels bureau chief Suzanne Lynch is on the line now to bring us up to speed on everything that happened at that meeting. Suzanne, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, was it a typical European Council meeting where they all meet and then occasionally people come out and leak here, there and yon? Was there any sense of drama or was it just a tedious business as usual?
Well, actually, I think it was one of the more dramatic EU councils we've seen in many years. Sometimes leaders get together and they don't have any deliverables really from this, but there was a lot at stake here. And in certain ways, it was reminiscent of the days of the Eurozone crisis, where you had, you know, one small country under pressure to agree to something by the EU. In this case, Belgium, who was facing huge pressure to agree to this plan to tap and mobilise Russian assets, most of which are based in Belgium. Now, in the end, Belgium wasn't alone. I think what really turned this was that the Italian Prime Minister, Giorgia Meloni, and we believe France to a lesser extent, also said during the meeting and in the run-up to the meeting that maybe there was another option here. That, you know, the Commission had suggested that a few plans and they needed to maybe go back to those. And one of them was a loan option. And that is ultimately what happened. But there are major questions about the authority and judgment, I suppose, of some of the people leading this claim to try and get the assets, namely European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen and the German Chancellor Friedrich Merz. They put a lot of political and personal capital into this. They had tried to convince De Wever, the Belgian Prime Minister, but ultimately the plan collapsed really early in the hours of Friday morning here.
Now, what is the difference really between Trump's plan, which is to grab 100 billion of Russian funds and grab 100 billion from the EU, put it into a 200 billion fund to repair and reconstruct Ukraine, and then take 100 billion back into his own pocket or where the US government coffers? Well, if Trump is prepared to be outspoken like that, why is Europe so pusillanimous about this? Because Putin does not play by any rules. So should Europe be the best boy in class, as it were, while, you know, Putin is messing them about?
Well, ultimately, the EU leaders are saying, you know, they have frozen these assets. So last week, they took a kind of technical decision that was quite important, which means that those assets now are indefinitely frozen. Russia cannot get those assets, and that's not going to change. So in a way, what the EU was saying last night, trying to put a more positive spin on this, was that they now have leverage. Putin knows that they have these assets and they could, in the future, use them to fund Ukraine or withhold them from Russia if they want. So they have that leverage. However, the other side of this is that Putin can see now that when push came to shove, the EU last night decided not to use them for a loan for Ukraine. They didn't make that jump. So that will be music to the ears of Moscow, particularly at a time, a really sensitive time in the peace negotiations. Yesterday, Volodymyr Zelensky was here in Brussels and met the leaders at the early part of the talks, which ultimately went on for 16 hours. And he gave a press conference here at lunchtime, saying that the assets were the preferred plan, essentially, and said it would put Ukraine in a hugely strong negotiating position as it goes into these negotiations on the peace plan, if it had this Russian assets plan behind it. Now, one way of looking at this is they do have money. The EU did decide to fund Ukraine for 2 years with 90 billion. So they did end up getting money for Ukraine, and that will be welcomed and was welcomed by Ukraine today. But at the same time, I think it does give mixed messages at the very least to Russia, that despite all the talk of getting this plan over the line and von der Leyen putting so much capital into this, they weren't ultimately able to do it when push came to shove last March.
Now, the money is frozen in Belgium, much of it, not all of it, but most of it's frozen in Belgium. So perhaps you can understand that Belgium doesn't want to be on the line for this. If everything goes pear-shaped, the money used to reconstruct Ukraine, and then Russia comes looking for the money and saying, you owe us this money, and you are Belgium, you are not the EU. You had our money, you took it. So you can understand their reluctance. And then there are others who are Putin puppets, really, and the Orban of Hungary and so on. So the question is, the others, the Malonis, the Macrons, what were they fearful of? What could Russia do to them that made them waver in this regard?
Well, there was a couple of things. One, I think that Meloni felt on principle that pushing this plan over the head of Belgium was a non-runner. I mean, she is a leader, we know, that is sceptical, I think it's fair to say, of the EU. She is a believer in national sovereignty. That's one of the reasons Donald Trump likes her. He sees her as an ideological partner in that sense. So I think there was this philosophical issue that, you know, the EU couldn't just push this through. And the EU, again, not to get too technical, last week changed its rules, invoked Article 122 of the EU treaty to allow it to push through this plan without unanimous agreement by EU countries. And that really annoyed some countries, including Italy. So I think a lot of it was a point of principle. Moscow, of course, has vowed to retaliate. There are lots of legal questions and doubts about that, obviously. You know, which court could this happen in? Would that ever happen? There have been reports that Russia has been pressurizing Belgium quietly, has been pressurizing Euroclear, the clearinghouse which hosts most of these assets. So a lot of pressure coming on Belgium. But they felt last night that this plan, you know, was so complex legally. One other issue is that it would have had to go to national parliaments for ratification. And we now hear that we believe it also would have gone to the Irish Parliament, for example, for ratification. Some countries, including Italy and France, raised questions about whether that would happen. France, as we know, has a very fractious political climate at the moment. They can't get their own budget through. You know, would they have been able to get this plan through next year? So with time being of the essence, there's a sense that this decision was made pretty quickly in the room, that once Meloni started raising questions and others kind of went in behind her, then they said, look, we can do this Ukraine loan plan quicker. Let's do that. And at least we do still have that asset plan in the future if we need to use it.
Now, the other dithering that went on yesterday was about Mercosur. And we know the farmers made their presence felt in Brussels yesterday. Were you out among them, Suzanne?
I was safely in the EU summit trying to cover what was happening at the assets. And it was interesting because even though it was the symbolism was very important that the farmers were there at the EU summit, there was so much security, as there always is, around the Schuman and the EU quarter, that a lot of the tractors and farmers didn't really get near the action. Although it is interesting that von der Leyen and Antonio Costa, the European Council president, they met with the main farming groups, with the result that the summit was actually delayed by about 90 minutes. So it was an important backdrop, and there were a lot of protests in other parts of Brussels. But yes, this was the other issue that wasn't officially on the agenda, but was a huge discussion among leaders privately, and this is the Mercosur trade agreement. Again, there was a lot of of PR around this last night when this press conference took place at around 3 a.m. in Brussels, with Ursula von der Leyen and Costa saying, look, this has been discussed for 25 years. What's another few weeks? What the EU has decided was that, again, Italy and France leading this, and they felt that they weren't ready to sign up to this deal and they wanted to delay. So we're hearing now that the deal will be, a new vote will happen on January the 12th. Now, the problem with that is that von der Leyen and Costa had their bags packed, literally ready to go to Brazil today for the South Americans are having their own Mercosur summit in Brazil on Saturday. And the idea had been that von der Leyen would sign a deal there. That's now not going to happen. So there was a lot of worry here yesterday. Would the South American partners start losing patience with the EU? The goalposts are changing again. However, officials are saying that Lula, the Brazilian president in particular, does want to get this deal done. So they're saying they're confident that ultimately it will be done early next year.
Now, you can look at the numbers, and I've heard Joe Lynham on our business program this morning doing this, and others as well, including various MEPs saying, you know, agriculture, it's important in Europe, of course, but in terms of the overall trade that might be done with these countries, it's relatively small. And then the argument from the farmers, which Francie Gorman, the president of the IFA, made for us very effectively, and I've heard others make it too, is that the so-called checks and balances that are supposed to happen, there was a recall of contaminated meat in Europe, meat from South America, and that contamination was supposed to have been detected in the factories in South America, not after it landed in Europe. So, you know, Europe may make pious statements about how rigorous their checks are going to be, but they're shown not to work. And you can get contaminations with hormones and antibiotics and so on that would not be permitted for Irish and European farmers to use.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of talk about that. And during the week, there was a vote down in Strasbourg where the European Council and the Parliament agreed to what they're calling a safeguard package to try and increase the checks and balances around the trade deal. And that went some way towards comforting some countries. But the harsh reality facing the agriculture sector now in Europe is that this Mercosur deal will go through because it just needs a qualified majority of countries to back it. So this is why Italy was so important, because if Italy decided it wasn't supporting it, well, then Macron, France, Poland, Ireland, etc., the countries opposed, would have enough of a blocking minority. But if Italy agrees to the deal, they don't. So the way it looks now with the figures is that if Italy comes on board, which Meloni seems to suggest that ultimately she would in January, well, then there's going to be enough of a majority to push the Mercosur deal through. Particularly, it's got huge backers like Germany and Spain who are very pro this deal, mainly because of what it's going to give the export markets and cars, etc.
So I was just going to ask you, you know, what's in it for them? I mean, for us, I heard some people talking about our pharma would become available in that market a lot cheaper if the Mercosur deal went through. I don't know what else we would sell besides food. I'm not sure how much of our whiskey they drink down there, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But what's in it for Italy? I mean, they have obviously an agricultural industry. They've got food. They've got wine. Lots of wine made in South America. So I'm not sure how big that market is. So Meloni's dilemma is what in terms of what she wants to flog to South America and what kind of opposition she'll face within?
Yeah, I think the big one here is the car sector. And that's the reason Germany, for example, is for this, and Italy, which has an important car sector as well. And then the supply chains across Europe that feed into the European car sector. So that's the main advantage of this. So it's like every trade deal, there are winners and losers. And for a lot of these countries, the advantages outweigh the disadvantages. Now, why Meloni blocked this? There's a lot of questions around that. Was it political posturing with her own farmers? Because Italy did not seem to be that opposed to it for that long. And it's maybe that Italy and France want to get concessions elsewhere. So in parallel to this, there are discussions about the next EU budget, which also includes funding for farming and changes to how that's structured. So Italy and France may want changes to that.
So do you think that might be the payoff? Okay, if you sign Mercosur, we'll increase the farming budget back to where it should be. Because, we heard Francie Gorman the other day talking about, even with all the extra people, there were cuts in the CAP, and those cuts have never been restored.
Yeah, but the reality is that most of the EU doesn't see it like that. It believes that the EU budget, too much of the EU budget goes to farming. That is a view that's held by a lot of people across Europe, countries that don't have such a big agriculture sector. So that is a dilemma. Now, in some ways, you could say that that's an equally important conversation that's going to happen. What happens in this next 7-year budget, the MFF it's called, and this is going to be crucial actually during Ireland's presidency of the Council of the EU that starts next July. This is when those technical discussions on the MFF are going to be happening. But Ireland, because it's small, it needs to ally with these other pro-farming countries, France being the dominant one by far. But also Poland is a hugely important figure here because it is a huge country of 40 million or so. Its voice really matters. And Polish farmers have been very unhappy about some of the policies coming from Brussels as regards agriculture too.
Now, some of the texts coming in. Mercosur is a terrible deal for the planet. The EU should sign up to South America's Tropical Forest Forever Fund instead and not encourage farmers and deforestation. And then on Ukraine, a number of comments and questions. Putin has cost the EU countries billions in housing Ukrainian refugees. We are entitled to take this Russian money because Putin and his cohorts caused the refugee crisis. While it's right that the world supports Ukraine financially in their defence efforts, what measures are in place to monitor the spending of billions going into that country? Because we know that there were concerns all along, even before the invasion, about corruption in Ukraine. And this one, to Russia, this shows the EU is split. And since they allow Hungary into meetings, Russia will know everything that's going on in the EU. That's from Liam Connolly. So what about that? Orban being in the Council of Ministers as Prime Minister of Hungary, but also, you know, other ministers in the various councils just basically could be reporting back to the Russians about everything.
Well, I suppose this is always the question for the EU. You've got EU, you've 27 EU leaders with very different views in some senses. And that's always a risk. I mean, Orban, one of the issues with Orban is that he has obviously met Vladimir Putin. He has been very sympathetic to the US peace plan, and he has made it clear that he's not interested in funding Ukraine anymore. And actually, significantly, in this EU loan plan that was agreed last night, the 90 billion, there is a carve out of sorts for Hungary, Slovakia and the Czech Republic. So they're very happy about that. But this is, I mean, one of the issues for Europe is Orban is facing an election next April. There is a lot of speculation that he could lose that election and you could have a very different leader in Hungary. But also then people are looking forward to 2027 when you could have maybe a Marine Le Pen. She obviously is facing her own difficulties in terms of her ability to run for French president. But you could have a scenario at any point that you've more right-wing nationalist and leaders and Eurosceptic leaders around the EU table. That is a risk that's always there for the EU. So I think, though, what the real takeaway from this has been the power of Giorgia Meloni, Italy, a very important country, a very big country with very, very close ties with some of the right wing elements of the Republican Party in the United States. Even though Meloni has been very rock solid, really, in her support for Ukraine. But I think her role here as a kingmaker on both these issues, the Ukraine loan last night and the Mercosur deal, speaks to her power that she is wielding now around the EU table.
Suzanne, thank you very much for joining us. That's Suzanne Lynch, Brussels Bureau Chief for Bloomberg, reporting on that council meeting which ended in the early hours.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.